We have multiple mandates in OHCHR OPT. If I have to explain it, it will be in three big streams. One is we lead under the humanitarian country team and response. We lead the protection cluster. There are over 120 protection actors, both UN and non-UN, who are all involved in responding to protection issues. We are not always the primary responders, but we coordinate those actions. For instance, under protection cluster, you have child protection response, which is led by UNICEF. You have gender-based violence work that is responded by UNFPA. You have mine action. You have mental health and psychosocial. So we are coordinating that work, both in Gaza as well as in West Bank. We are the only UN office in OPT that has a formal mandate from the General Assembly and the Human Rights Council to monitor and report. And we have been doing this for many years now. The third and final stream of work is, of course, the capacity building of the Palestinian Authority. Now, the last stream has, of course, slowed down. The stress and the increased pressure to monitor and report and to respond to protection cluster since the 7th of October has increased.
Along all those tracks that you mentioned, you're gathering accounts of different violations. Could you share with us what are they, especially recently, and do you manage to get access to people on both sides of this conflict?
We have been gathering information on violations for many years now. In the current context, particularly in Gaza since 7th of October, I can say the list of violations are extremely long and grave. To start with, for example, we have heard of families completely being bombed, close to 1.9 million people displaced within Gaza multiple times. We know that there are 17,000 children who are unaccompanied or separated at this point in time, 32,000 people who are killed, out of which close to 70% are women and children. We have accounts of mass detention, particularly of men, but women as well, and a number of them who have faced ill treatment, humiliation, and torture as well. We have met many of them, and the accounts of how they've been treated, including torture, seems to be consistent. There's a severe shortage of food. Famine is a real threat at this point in time. People have died due to dehydration and famine as well. On the West Bank side, we've been monitoring for years now the expansion of settlements, settler violence that have continued, the killing of Palestinians by settlers and the Israeli Defense Forces in West Bank, severe movement restrictions, and a range of other human rights violations that we see. On the Israeli side, we all know that about 1,200 people have also been killed. 100 plus hostages still remain inside Gaza. There are accounts of sexual violence and property destruction in Israel, too. In terms of access in Gaza, of course, it is an ongoing conflict situation. It is a war zone. So the access does depend on different parts of Gaza. West Bank is slightly different. We have better access. But safety and security for our national staff is still a concern. Inside Israel, we do not have access in West Bank and in Israel. International staff of OHCHR do not have access. Israel has refused a visa for the last 3 years. So predominantly, we still do a lot of our work through our very strong national staff. I do want to say that the High Commissioner for Human Rights has, since the 7th of October, on several occasions, written to the government of Israel asking for access to both Israel as well as the occupied Palestinian territory to monitor and record violations on both sides. I think it's extremely important for Israel to allow an independent monitoring body like OHCHR to monitor and to document the violations that have been committed on the 6th, 7th, and 8th of October. We have reports of people being killed, having been taken as hostages, accounts of sexual violence, We would want to go there and verify this and officially put it on record in our report, just the way we do in the occupied Palestinian territory. And in order to assess that, we need access. And we keep reaching out to Israel and to all other member states that have influence to make sure that we have that important access.
You've been working in the area of human rights for several decades already. Can you say how much the current situation is different vis-a-vis those experiences you had in the past?
Look, every situation is different. What we do need to keep in mind is, in the case of occupied Palestinian territory, we are talking about 56 years of occupation. We are talking about 16 years of continuous blockade of Gaza. We have been talking about collective punishment of Palestinians inside Gaza. We have been talking about expansion of settlements for years in West Bank and settler violence. We've talked about continuous lack of accountability, or in other words, impunity for grave human rights violations in the context of OPT. We have been reporting on human rights violations by all three duty bearers, Israel, the Palestinian Authority, and the de facto authority. We have seen, to start with, a siege since the 12th of October. There are people dying of malnutrition and hunger, the severe lack of food, not because there is no supply of food. There's a chain outside in Rafah on the Egyptian side waiting to enter. But it is simply, like the High Commissioner has constantly called, it's a human-made famine. The entire population is under severe humanitarian need. And then close to 1.9 million people have been constantly displaced more than two, three times on several occasions. So these are extremely particular to the OPT. There has to be an end to the occupation. And this cannot be just rhetoric.
One might say that the resolutions, the documents which are adopted and put together cannot help people enough. But what do you think? What gives you hope that your work can yield results?
I understand the cynicism, especially in the current context. But I have to say, our work of monitoring and reporting has been important, but it becomes even more critical in the current situation, so that decision makers are able to make the right decision for the people in the region, particularly in Gaza. In the era of misinformation and disinformation that we have seen, we become really the independent monitoring body. Recording violations are extremely important for the sake of accountability. Our statements, our reports are being read seriously by member states, by leaders, to make the right decision. Having said that, yes, I think there can be better decisions, especially from the Security Council. It can be faster, and we should be given more authority to implement those Security Council decisions.
One of the clusters along which you are monitoring the work is children. Would you be able to comment on the situation with education for children in Gaza recently?
The long-term impact of this war is going to be assessed and felt for several years. What we are simply seeing at this point in time is an immediate catastrophe. Schools have become shelter for IDPs. Many schools have been destroyed. That basically means literally no education for children. I was in Gaza between the 15th and 22nd of November, and I can tell you, you will see children everywhere running around in the streets, waking up in the morning, carrying jerry cans to bring water, chopping wood, bringing stones to keep their plastic sheets that are used to make tents together. There are no education system at this point in time. So that's a real danger. I've talked to some of the older students as well, someone who was in university, and basically they say they have no proof, even if they want to register online, that they have passed a certain level of education, because there's university education system and schools have been bombed at this stage. So it is a grave concern. The question is, what happens to their future? And we need to address these things very quickly. But to do all those things, we need an immediate ceasefire. Unless that happens, we will not be able to address some of these longer term, mid to longer term problems that we face.
What gives you energy? What gives you hope? What drives you in your everyday work? What are human rights and why are they part of our everyday life?
What drives us is the responsibility to uphold, implement human rights around the globe. Mandate is one thing, but as individual human rights officers, we have signed up and we take up the responsibility to make sure that this is upheld in every part of the globe. I think it's extremely important that we measure human rights violations and respect for human rights around the globe with the same scale. We do not want to leave any stone unturned in order to bring the world's attention to the problems in Gaza so that we can end and find solution. Human rights is not a luxury. The human rights law and the international humanitarian law that we have today and the structure that comes with it is the best we have. We do not have any alternate at this point in time, and we have to preserve that.